Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
This is the moment Tufts University graduate student Rumaysa Ozturk was arrested and taken into federal custody. Two plainclothes officers approaching the 30-year-old in Somerville outside of Boston. Ozturk at first appears to back away before more agents approach, one eventually taking her phone out of her hand. Officers then take her backpack off, handcuff her, and lead her across the street to a car.
Hey, no, no!
This is the scene in the Palestinian village of Susia in the Israeli-occupied West Bank after a group of masked extremist Israeli settlers stormed several houses. Several eyewitnesses tell NPR the settlers rampaged houses and bashed cars, including the activist car, as you can see here in the dashcam footage. They also attacked people, including Hamdan Bellal, who just a few weeks ago had been on stage at the Oscars, winning an award as a co-director for the film No Other Land, which documented this kind of violence in the West Bank.
President Trump invoked a 200-year-old act that gives the president wartime powers to deport undocumented immigrants with little to no due process.
Shackled, their heads shaved, and shipped out of the country. Hundreds of Venezuelan immigrants in the U.S. deported to a mega prison in El Salvador.
This is a time for reaching out to all the others who feel the same outrage at Trump MAGA fascism. A time for collective action and self-sacrificing struggle for the greater good. The greater good of defeating this fascism.
Welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm joined today by Annie Day. Annie, welcome.
Thanks, Sansara. Very glad to be here, and welcome to everyone tuning in. This show is about a revolution to overthrow this whole nightmare of a system and bring a radically different and far better world into being. And we base ourselves on the revolutionary leadership of Bob Avakian, who's developed the new communism, an understanding that we actually can organize society on a whole different foundation. And you'll hear more from Bob Avakian directly later in today's show.
We began today's episode with footage of yet another student being disappeared in broad daylight. Masked and armed, Trump's Gestapo immigration authorities whisking people away, targeted for having stood up and spoken out. We showed the barbaric and depraved escalation of genocide and terror against the people of Palestine. We showed the torture prison all the way in El Salvador that Trump has sent immigrants into in violation of their rights and of the courts. And we showed Bob Avakian calling out what is demanded from each and every one of us now, reaching out to all the others who feel the same outrage at Trump MAGA fascism that we do, and waging collective and self-sacrificing struggle for the greater good of defeating this fascism. In a moment, we'll highlight a few more recent developments before bringing on Andy Z to talk about very important work and mobilizations, especially the broad protests being called by the group Indivisible on April 5th and taken up by many other groups and movements. And we'll be getting into the work being done and called for by RefuseFascism.org. Because the only way to stop this fascist nightmare is for millions of people to create a situation through their sustained mass protests and nonviolent resistance, where the Trump fascist regime is driven from power. Then we'll share some excerpts of my recent interviews with Bob Avakian that shed powerful light on what is happening and how this fascism can be defeated and a whole better and different future be won. And finally, Annie will bring us a closer look at the massive escalation of genocide in Gaza and the lynch mob terror in the West Bank of Palestine.
So what's happened this past week? After kidnapping more than 200 Venezuelan immigrants, sending them to black site torture prisons in El Salvador, as Sansara just said, defying the rule of law in the process, Trump has tweeted out a threat to send anyone who's accused or convicted of protesting or vandalism against Tesla dealerships. That's Elon Musk's car company. Trump posted, "I look forward to watching the sick terrorist thugs get 20-year jail sentences for what they are doing to Elon Musk and Tesla. Perhaps they could serve them in the prisons of El Salvador, which have become so recently famous for such lovely conditions." That's Trump and his fascist gangster threats. And you know that he intends this for any protest that he deems unacceptable.
For a sense of how extreme Trump's assault on the rule of law has become, listen to just the start of this video from the mainstream New York Times law writer, Adam Liptak.
So for weeks now, we've been exploring a question: are we in a constitutional crisis? The answer is yes. But more important, that may be the wrong question. The right question to ask is, are we on the cusp of a fundamental and lasting and perhaps irrevocable transformation of American society and government?
Liptak then stresses that in more than two decades of covering the courts and 17 years covering the Supreme Court, he has never seen anything even remotely like what Trump is doing. The volume of executive orders, Trump's refusal to comply with court challenges to what he's doing, Trump calling for the impeachment, that is, the removal of judges who rule against him. Liptak mentions the way the Supreme Court previously gave Trump substantial immunity from the charges he had faced after he tried to overturn the 2020 election. But then Liptak goes on to say this.
That's important, but it's nowhere near as important as some statements in the decision that laid out a vision of the presidency in which the president has unchecked power in many realms of his job. And that ruling certainly seems to have emboldened President Trump in his second term. He is asserting a kind of power over American society that we've not seen before in our history.
Take that in. A fundamental and lasting and perhaps irrevocable transformation of American society and government. This transformation is towards fascism, and it is advancing rapidly.
But not only has the march towards fascism advanced, so have the waves of capitulation and collaboration with fascism. Just this week, the historically liberal and major law firm Paul Weiss was targeted by Trump, and they capitulated. They were targeted for, on the surface, taking cases against Trump. And instead of standing up to fight this, they caved in. And they agreed to over $40 million worth of pro bono, that is, free cases, in the service of Trump's MAGA fascist program.
And then there's Columbia University that capitulated to Trump's fascist extortion, agreeing to collaborate with MAGA control over what gets taught in Middle East and African studies and beyond, what ideas are allowed, what kind of protest is allowed, and the regime's absolute terror and disappearances against students and even legal immigrants who dare to stand up against U.S.-backed Israeli genocide in Gaza or anything else that they deem unacceptable. So it is important, and it took courage, that this past week, 50 professors from Columbia came out and they protested this.
We need to stand up.
Columbia University professors fought the rain to rally, urging their employer to defend teaching.
And if we, the faculty, the teachers, do not stand up for these values, who can we be for our students?
This group's upset with the institution's Friday decision to give in to the Trump administration and make sweeping changes.
But far, far more is needed across Columbia's campus, across every university and college in this country, and throughout society as a whole. Here, a social media post put together by Refuse Fascism, drawing from a powerful interview by Jay Inslee, former governor of Washington State, is very much to the point.
I think we need a new word in our lexicon, and that word is collaborator. The more people that decide to get in their bunkers and keep their head down and become collaborators with this autocrat, the more dangerous this will become. And I have been astounded by this. What has Harvard said about the attack on one of their colleagues at Columbia University? What have they said? Nothing. Crickets. What has Stanford said about that? Nothing. Crickets. What, you know, don't they study history at Harvard? Don't they understand the history of the early 30s? These folks who are quiet are collaborators.
For some people, it's not clear where you go from acquiescence into becoming a collaborator. The acquiescence is, I need to keep my jobs. I don't agree with Donald Trump, but I'm going to keep my head down. When do you turn into a collaborator?
Yesterday. And I'll tell you why. Quietude, passivity is just as bad as active collaboration here right now. And if we don't understand the threats, then we haven't read our history.
Now take note. Even Inslee is making clear that to not speak out at this point, to not stand up and protest, to not fight against this whole direction, is to collaborate with it, to become part of enabling and strengthening the fascist juggernaut. Silence in the face of this fascism is complicity. So what we want to do now is bring on Andy Z. We're going to talk about what we need to be doing instead of becoming complicit and collaborators. All right, so Andy Z, welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less Show, one of our hosts. I'm so glad to be having you here.
Always good to be here. Always good to be with you, Sansara.
All right, so we have Andy on right now. We want to have a conversation about what needs to be done about this rising fascism. We talked about a lot of the horrors escalating, the capitulation wave upon wave. But Andy, like myself, we're both part of the collective broader leadership of Refuse Fascism. We're on the National Editorial Board. And so we've been working with others to bring forward the kind of massive resistance necessary to defeat this fascism. And I think you have a very keen sense of a lot of what we've been running into, what people understand, what they don't understand and need to understand. And so we want to get into some of this here. And I was hoping that you could start by talking about these protests that are planned on April 5th, called by Indivisible. What are they? Why do they matter so much? And how is Refuse Fascism seeing this and mobilizing for it?
These protests matter because we think there's a possibility, and in fact, maybe even a likelihood, that this is going to be one of the largest protests thus far against the whole direction of the Trump fascist regime. Now, the protests, as you said, were called by Indivisible, and you know, it's the name, the umbrella that they're doing it under is hands off Social Security, hands off healthcare, hands off a whole litany of things that this fascist regime is doing. And as such, many different groups have signed on, and we in Refuse Fascism and also the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity are organizing and working to bring people to this, including bringing people to in Los Angeles and in New York, and I'm hoping in Chicago as well.
And D.C. in particular. And,
oh, yeah. Sorry. Not in New York. Thank you very much. Yes, Washington, D.C. We're trying to get the whole East Coast, the people who Refuse Fascism knows, to come and join us in a rally before the main rally that called by Indivisible, and then march as a group over there. Why? Because it's very important that people understand the nature of what we're facing in this and why we call it the Trump fascist regime. Very important to understand what this fascism is and the momentum that it has. And second, on that basis, what is it that we have to do? What kind of struggle is going to be necessary? What kind of sacrifice, what kind of society-wide movement is going to be necessary to actually prevent the consolidation of fascism? And we are very excited by the prospect of lots and lots of people being there. And now we're not just resting until the 5th. We're actually going out in our different chapters and finding every place that people are, and every place people are resisting and standing up, standing with them, and in that way building for these demonstrations.
Now, I think it is really important that people will be coming out in the streets. I think it's also, you mentioned, people need to understand that this, what we're facing, is fascism and what the significance of that is. And it's a word that not enough people are using, but more and more people are using. I mean, I noticed it's not in the call of these protests, the hands-off protests. They're hands-off many, many righteous demands, but they don't call it fascism. But some people are, but it has meaning. And I think it'd be helpful if you were to bring alive, why does it matter to understand that it's fascism? What's the content of that?
Well, like with anything you're trying to do, and certainly any major struggle, you have to understand what the problem is that you're facing, and then off of that, you can develop the means to fight it. And fascism, you know, there's many different elements of it. There's many different parts of the program. Yes, it's authoritarian, and you know, but what is the essence of it? Refuse fascism is going to these protests and bringing a call to conscience, a call to act, a major statement we've made for this time that we're trying to get thousands of signatures on, and several prominent people have signed, and it's going to have many different uses. But one of the key uses, it's a guide to what it is that we're facing, and it says that fascism is not a curse word. Fully imposed, it is a radically oppressive and repressive form of rule over the people of this country with devastating impact on the people of the world. The rule of law is shredded. Civil and democratic rights are eliminated. Dissent is piece by piece criminalized. The truth is bludgeoned. Group after group is demonized and targeted along a trajectory that leads to real catastrophe. If you think about that, it gives you a picture of the essence of this. It's a different form of rule over the same system that we've been living in. But it is a different form of rule that's qualitative in our ability to think critically. That's why they're destroying the universities. This whole thing about going after the universities is not about just some economic stuff. This is about economic leverage and arrests and demonization. All has to do with destroying critical thinking. That's why we say the truth is bludgeoned and dissent is piece by piece criminalized. This is what we're seeing. We also, with this form of rule, it enables the fascist regime, the Trump MAGA fascist regime, to institute a program which we in Refuse Fascism has referred to as the triad of white supremacy, patriarchy, and xenophobia, the outright racism that runs so thick through the MAGA movement and through Trump himself and the people who are in his cabinet. Two, the patriarchy, taking away the fundamental right of women to be independent beings who are human beings who are in control of their own destinies and to be nothing other than either a plaything or breeder for men. The complete erasure of trans people and the demonization and targeting of LGBTQ people. And at the heart of their program, or at least the first battering ram, is going after the immigrants. Demonization, deportation, and trying to send terror, as we began the show, throughout society by showing these, taking these Venezuelan alleged gang members with no hearing. This is, means the rule of law is also vitiated, which means taken away, being herded onto planes and then marched through phalanxes of police into a high-tech dungeon in the middle of a jungle. This is fascism. It's a different form of rule of the same system, and it has momentum and such that it could actually end up being, you know, what actually rules. Two more elements I want to bring out about this in terms of program and ideology. On ideology, at the heart of the Trump MAGA movement is a Christian fascism. And you can see that in Vance very, very, very strongly, Sansara, where what they really want is a theocratic morality, a particular theocratic morality, this Christian fascism, which has been promoted and developing over decades now in this country. And it is America over the whole world, which you see with Trump. Greenland, we need Greenland, we'll just take it. Gaza, we'll turn it into a casino and resort. Panama, get the hell out of there, we're going to take the canal back. But this is not just the just a few, three things he's done. This is a whole way of approaching the world under the boot of the Trump fascist MAGA regime.
You know, at the beginning of the show, we tried, and we did this week, we've done it last week, we've been trying to capture the momentum and the furious pace of this galloping, accelerating juggernaut towards all-out fascist consolidation. This is also something people, even people who are really distressed by what's happening, they see a lot of the bad and they might even be protesting some of it, which is really important. We need more of that. But this direction and momentum. It's something Bob Avakian spoke to very powerfully recently, and I think it's important that we speak about it a little bit as well.
You know, we say that it can become too late to stop fascism. A couple episodes ago of the RNL show, you played something from Coco Das, who's also on the editorial board with that, where she read the famous poem by the pastor Martin Niemöller, where first they came for the communists and I didn't speak up. And then they came for the trade unions and I didn't speak up. The point is, he goes through a very short list, and the point comes when it's too late, when they come for him. And the point is, you have to take this up from the beginning. But I thought something that Bob Avakian, a very important message he put out recently on his, we posted on his BA official social media, it's on revcom.us as well, that actually gets at this, which I want to take some time just to read it, because I think it gives you a sense of what we're talking about here. He says that Trump's fascist rule, like Hitler's before him, is a regime of horrors and is completely illegitimate. Hitler came to power through the normal processes of the Weimar Republic, the democratic form of capitalist rule in Germany in the early 1930s. Hitler then trampled on and quickly put to end to the basic norms and principles of that republic, forcibly imposing in its place the open fascist dictatorship of the Nazis. This laid the basis for all the horrific atrocities committed by the Hitler-Nazi regime, atrocities which were not committed all at once, but in an escalating way over the next decade, resulting in the genocidal murder of 6 million Jews. And even with particular differences, what is happening now with Trump's fascist rule also involves a terrible momentum, a momentum that will involve massive, monstrous crimes against humanity in this country and in the world overall. He goes on to talk about the devastation of the climate and the heightened danger of war, nuclear war, each of which could mean the end of human life as we know it. So the point here, though, that is very important to understand in terms of the momentum, you're seeing it. People are saying that, my God, it's 2 things, 10 things every day. It just keeps coming and coming. This is the momentum. And step by step, earlier in the program, you just talked about an offhanded comment he made. Oh, we should get these Tesla protesters and ship them off to El Salvador. Somebody asks him about that tomorrow. He says, well, that was just an idea, just something I'm thinking about. But then you start seeing people being picked up in the dead of night from universities, people who sue the government over legitimate claims being deported without even having their cases heard. You start seeing the rule of law step by step chipped away. You see the intimidation with universities capitulating to financial pressure, to the law firms capitulating to financial
blackmail.
And this, you have to recognize that it's, you don't just wait till each thing is solved. You have to go up against the whole thing, because this momentum has direction. And as each right is taken away, there's less and less ground for people to stand on. And that's what's already happening. You can't allow this to happen. You have to stop it now. Now is the time to resist this. Now is the time to take to the streets in the way that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think the speed that you're describing, the speed at which with this regime is advancing, and that its crimes are being normalized, capitulated to, collaborated with, even as many, many people hate what's happening and there's the potential to call them forward. I think this underscores the importance of what is going to be in the streets on April 5th, the importance of making this as powerful as possible, as many people out in the streets as possible, and bringing in the mission of Refuse Fascism, also the mission of the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity against the system that gave rise to this, but also uniting with the fight against this fascism and raising the slogans, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And very importantly, this has to be spread, and it's a sentiment that many people will resonate with, even if they don't fully understand that we're facing fascism. The Trump fascist regime must go. This has to be, that's to your point, it's not enough to fight each crime as it comes. You'll lose initiative to the whole onslaught. You have to go after the entire regime. The entire regime must be ousted. And that begs the question, is that possible and how?
Yeah, well, people do have that. And, you know, that slogan, Trump, the Trump fascist regime must go, or even just Trump must go, is something we've both had experiences of speaking to hundreds, if not thousands of people, and all the fists go in the air, and people say that. And then when you talk to them, they don't know, well, where's everybody else, they say. Well, I'm hoping some of those everybody else's are out there on the 5th. That's what we're working for. And but then we need a lot of organizers out in the field all the time organizing around this. And that's why in Washington, on the next day, we're going to be holding a meeting for people who come to that protest to meet with us. And then 2 weeks later, on the 19th of April, we're Refuse Fascism is going to have conferences on this. But I want to get back to the question, what are the implications for what we have to do, given that fascism has a direction, it has it is galloping towards that direction, and that direction means the shutting down of dissent, essentially, under extreme duress for people. I think, but when people say, where is this going to come from, the statement that we've issued, call to conscience, a call to act, speaks to this. I want to read from it. It says that there can be no conciliation or collaboration between the world we want and the country they want, speaking of the fascists. We have no common cause with MAGA fascism, and there is a way to defeat this. And then it walks through the people who can actually make this happen and who need to do this. Now I'm quoting from it again. Those who have dedicated their lives to service, to teach children, to heal the sick, to conduct life-saving research, refusing to comply with fascist decrees, backed up by all justice-loving people. Students and young people whose whole future is on the line, making schools and campuses centers of resistance and filling the streets. Women and LGBTQ people who are furious at being enslaved and erased, bringing their defiance and rage into the public square. People of color and everyone sick to death of white supremacy and refusing to go back, bringing the experience and the fury of centuries of resistance into this fight. Artists, writers, clergy, and legal scholars speaking in many voices to say no and bringing their voices into the struggle. With this, millions of people in the streets not allowing business as usual when that business is the cementing of fascist rule with the vilest degrading morality shoved down our throats. Many voices and bodies demanding the Trump fascist regime must go. With this, we can and must create a political crisis in which the Trump regime cannot govern and implement their fascist program, or even maintain his hold on power. I want to read that again, that last sentence. We must create a political crisis in which the Trump regime cannot govern and implement their fascist program, or even maintain his hold on power. This is important. I want you to take a look. Go on the internet now and take a look at what's happening in South Korea, what happened during the Arab Spring. These are places where regimes were driven from power by people not just coming out and protesting once, but continually building and building, people coming and going home, and then other people coming and taking their place in a movement that actually makes things come to a halt. And then the people who are resisting in these institutions will feel even more empowered to resist and refuse. And then people even in the ruling class, people like we showed earlier on the show, the former governor of Washington State, they're empowered to also push things further and drive this regime from power. I want to just go on and read the next to last paragraph. And then I'm going to ask Sansara to read the last paragraph. We must not allow ourselves to be divided and conquered. We must unite all who can be united from many different viewpoints and perspectives to foster and draw on a collective spirit of courage and righteous fury and a willingness to make the necessary sacrifices for the greater good of defeating this fascism. We in our millions are a force powerful enough to defeat this Trump MAGA fascism. So that's what we have to do. That's what we're going to these protests to bring to people. That's what we're going to discuss in the meeting afterwards in Washington, D.C. and in conferences. That's what we want to do every day. There's an outrage. We want to get people out in the streets. But I wanted you, Sansara, to read the last paragraph and talk about what it's going to take for people to do what's required, but even more, to be the people who we need to be.
Well, I'm happy to. I mean, listening to you read this call to conscience, call to act, it is extremely powerful. It's going to matter to have big contingents of people with Refuse Fascism taking this down to D.C., bringing this to L.A. and to the protests called around the country on April 5th and every day between now and then, and getting it in people's hands and organizing them to take it up. Let it not be said that when there was still a chance to stop an unprecedented threat to the future of humanity, we did not rise to meet the challenge of our time. Let us not allow the watching world today to despair of our silence and our failure to act. Instead, let the world see our determination and courage and hear our righteous demand. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. The fascist Trump regime must go. And I think this really is the challenge of our time. This really is the earth-shaping, future-shaping struggle. What Trump MAGA fascism is doing, what it's already done, what it's showing it will do to the people of this country and to the people of the world and to the planet itself, it's a turning point in history. And what you do right now, what we mobilize others to do right now, is going to have everything to do with what kind of future, or whether humanity even has a future. And I've been out, you've been out. We covered all the horrors at the opening, some of the horrors at the opening of the show, but there are people who really care very deeply. And they're all across this country. They're on the campuses, they're the service workers, they're in every corner of society. This is the time for people to come together and think of something bigger than themselves, to make sacrifice and to find their courage, find their voices, and have each other's backs, because there really is a force. It's not just the horror. There really is a force that could defeat this. There really is a program and a direction that can make that good. Let's take this to people. Let's organize them into it. And let's really do something that inspires and gives heart to people all over the world.
I'm glad I asked you, Sansara. That is true. Now is the time. It's true that now is the time when people have to act. There is a steamroller coming, but there is a force in the millions of people. Millions of decent people, people who haven't been politically involved before in the past, they expected other people to take care of it for them. But now they're upset, disquieted. We have to go out to them about what has to be done. And this is the time. So let's go. We'll see you hopefully before the 5th, but definitely on the 5th.
Now we're going to play a clip from the recent interview that Bob Avakian did with Sansara. Humanity does not have to live this way. Let's watch.
You described in the 60s not saying, oh, they're not listening, and then just giving up. But I think today, in a very widespread way, people have become convinced that the whole point of protest is to get them to listen, you know, or maybe to be channeled then into the quote unquote realistic mode of electoral change. And I just wonder if you want to speak a little bit more to how what you're describing is very different than that.
It's important to understand most people, when they start protesting under the existing system, they're not thinking that they're going to go all the way to trying to get rid of the system. They are largely coming from the place of, we got to make our voices heard. We got to let the people in power know that we don't want this, and we've got to make them listen, and when we make them listen, then they'll change things. That was definitely true in the 60s. I remember the early demonstrations. What are you talking about, civil rights, or are you talking about anti-war, or whatever you're talking about? That was the mentality, and those were the sentiments of most of the people who took part at the beginning. The question is, what do you do when it becomes more and more clear that the people in power, yes, they heard you, but they don't give a damn, because they have interests that are fundamentally opposed to yours and fundamentally opposed to what you think is decent and moral, if you want to put it in that way. I mean, look at Biden. You know, What is Biden's legacy along with Harris going to be? Genocide and mass incarceration. That's the real legacy of Biden and the whole Biden-Harris administration. You know, and why did Biden continue? And why is he continuing right now in the very last days of his time in office? Why is he continuing to pump, you know, military aid to Israel, as well as continuing to increase the U.S. aid to the proxy war against Russia in Ukraine? Because fundamental interests of the system are involved. The role of Israel as an outpost and as an attack dog for U.S. imperialism in this crucial strategic region of the Middle East is of fundamental consequence and importance for the whole U.S. capitalist imperialist system. And that's why, you know, 99 physicians who were in Gaza wrote an open letter to Biden and Harris telling them in very, very clear terms the genocide that was being carried out and the massive scale beyond even what the figures are of the death and devastation this is causing. And they didn't care. It didn't impact them at all. Why? Because fundamental interests are involved in this system. So they're going to continue even in the face of all this. And, you know, it may have even contributed to Harris losing the election that they pursued this. But there were more fundamental things at stake. Their service to this system was more important to them. They are more dedicated to this monstrosity of a system than they care even about their own political fortunes in the short term, much as they do care about that. Excuse me. So, you know, when you see this, what do you do? Well, I guess the problem's just too big for us, so I guess we'll just go home, or we'll slink back and, you know, into the woodwork and talk about doing things locally or do self-care or whatever. I understand why people get discouraged, but the thing to do is not to get discouraged, it's to get more angry. And as a foundation for that anger, get a deeper understanding of what you're up against and what you're dealing with. You know, and, it, you know, in, to take the example again of the Vietnam War, it wasn't primarily the massive and growing demonstrations against the war in this country that forced the U.S. government to pull back from Vietnam. There was a whole complex of factors, including the whole international situation, and including how the protests in this country affected the military of this country, where, as they've admitted, by the in stages of the Vietnam War, especially the army, was becoming unreliable. There were rebellions in the army. So all that was very important. And even if it wasn't the most basic reason why they pulled back from Vietnam, it was a very important contributing factor. Because the very stability of rule of this system was beginning to be shaken in very fundamental ways as a result of their continuing the war in Vietnam and massive numbers of people coming to oppose it. You know, and so the same kind of thing needs to happen now around this fascism represented, this MAGA fascism of Trump and this whole regime that's coming to power. And more fundamentally, and this has to do with the two slogans we talked about, more fundamentally, people need to look and see, why is it that this system doesn't listen to us? When clearly what we're saying is right, clearly what we're saying is moral, clearly what we're saying is righteous, but they don't listen. Why don't they listen to us? And what should we conclude from that? Should we conclude, well, I guess they're not going to listen, so we just have to go, you know, back into the woodwork and go for ourselves? Or should we conclude there's something fundamentally wrong with this whole system? Some fundamental thing about its very nature which requires it to carry out, you know, it's incredible atrocities like the genocide in Gaza that's fully armed and backed by the U.S. I mean, one of the signers of that letter, the 99 physicians and others that I referred to, made a simple statement. He said, how can it be the fact that there is no major political party in this country for whom genocide is a no-go. Think about that statement. What does that tell you? There's no major with all their very acute, even antagonistic differences, neither party considers genocide a no-go. Genocide is a go if it serves their fundamental interests, and they will back it to the hilt if that's the case. What should you do in the face of a recognition of that? Shrink back or come forward even more powerfully and even more fundamentally dig into the nature of the beast that you're up against and what's really necessary to deal with this beast in the way it needs to be dealt with?
You have made the point that theory is the dynamic factor in ideology, and that most fundamentally people act on the basis of what they've come to understand. And you were just speaking to this. But I think right now, today, people often, you hear this at the high tide of any mass struggle, whether it be 2020 or the righteous uprisings on the campuses recently against the genocide in Gaza. At the high tide, you hear people passionately insisting that we're just never going to give up and believing that the main thing that will determine their success is their refusal to give up, their determination to keep fighting. And yet over and over again, you know, time goes by, these movements face heavy repression, they come up against other limitations, and at least for now, these movements have subsided. And so I wonder if you could speak more about this role of theory and really understanding the nature of the system and the importance of theory in persevering and actually advancing in these struggles and in actual liberation.
Yeah, well, I think it's like, you know, what, to use Marxist terms, there's a dialectical relation, a back and forth between sort of a basic moral stand and the theoretical understanding that you're talking about. I mean, it's been said, and it's very important, first you have to care. You know, if you don't have the mentality and the morality to care about what's happening to people, you know, the kind of things I've been talking about, the very real horrors that are very real that I've been describing and referring to. If you don't even care about that, then of course you're not going to do anything. But a lot of people do care. So that's a starting point. You have to care. But then, you know, the question of how do you understand, excuse me, what you're up against is going to have a determining influence on what you do on the basis of initially caring. If you don't understand what you're up against, if you think, well, we just need to let them know how we feel, we just have to let them know that this is really wrong, and then that doesn't work, quote unquote. They don't respond. They don't care that you care. Well, then you just, you know, if your understanding doesn't go any deeper than that, then you are going to kind of pull back. But if you dig, if you can, see, here's the thing. Nobody, well, you know, let me put it this way. Almost nobody starts out as a revolutionary or a communist or whatever. You know, there are a few people who, what they used to be called red diaper babies, you know, who grew up with communist parents or whatever, and a lot of them didn't turn out so well because it isn't a matter of genetics and it isn't a matter of just your upbringing. You actually have to develop an understanding. And my point here is that most people who do develop into revolutionaries and communists do so through the back and forth of experience and then learning more deeply about what that experience teaches them in the context of the larger things going on in the world. That's certainly, you know, how I developed to where I am, and I'm sure that it's true for you and, you know, most people, again, who come to this understanding. And that's where the theory enters in. And the theory is not just abstract. Once again, it goes back to a scientific method. You have to, when you run up against obstacles, you have to examine and analyze and synthesize scientifically what is it you're up against. How does that relate to deeper things? How does it interconnect with other things? And what is the essence of this? What is the core of this? And what does it show you? And then what does it require you to do? And that's where, again, the dialectic, if you will, the back and forth between science and morality comes in. Because you can come to an understanding, oh man, it's the whole system. But I don't want to sacrifice to try to deal with the whole system, especially when nobody else seems to want to do it. You know, well, that's a question of like your morality. And it's either going to be a positive dialectic, a positive back and forth influence, or it's going to be a negative one. If it's a positive one, the more that you come to understand scientifically, the more you're going to be fortified in your determination to do something about it. If it's a negative, you know, process, the more that you come to get a sense of what you're up against, then if your morality is just, you know, going for self, or I'll sacrifice up to a point, but not when it really matters, well, then you're going to pull back. So that's how those things are interconnected and continually mutually influencing each other. And in that relationship, in an overall sense, while the morality is extremely important, again, first you have to care, the scientific approach and the increasing understanding, or the theory, if you want to put it that way, you know, is the main thing that you can, you know, that you can take initiative around in order to, you know, actually move forward rather than backward in the face of the obstacles that you face. You understand more deeply, and then that can lead you, if you start out caring and you continue to care, then when you learn more, you know, your theory, the scientific approach, you know, enables you to understand more what you're up against. Then, if you continue with that morality of caring, you're going to be more determined to go deeper and farther, or further, whichever is the correct in this particular thing, might be further, to go deeper and further in actually fighting through to get to the root of the problem and to uproot it. So, the theory, in an overall sense, the increased scientific understanding is the thing that gives you the most initiative. But it does go back and forth with your basic morality.
What if we all operated from a place of collective liberation over self-preservation? What if we saw the children of Gaza as our own? What if we heard our own six-year-old in the voice of Hin Rajab begging to a 911 operator for someone to come save her? What if we saw ourselves in the men and the boys with black bags over their heads, stripped of their clothing, numbered, zip-tied, heading to the most inhumane torture one could imagine? What if we felt their hunger? What if we imagined their thirst? What if we thought about the U.S. bombs pummeling throughout the night, what that would feel like? What if we visualized every university, mosque, community, home, neighborhood, memories buried under the same rubble that was suffocating our relatives and our loved ones? What if we saw ourselves? What if we didn't see them? What if we saw us? This moment is the biggest threat to humanity we have ever faced. The earth is aching. Systemic oppression is advancing at a rate that none of us can keep up with. But we cannot allow our hearts to become hardened. The people of Palestine have given me the greatest gift. They have taught me what actually matters in this finite amount of time we have on this earth. My spirit has been reminded. I want to live in a world where standing up against genocide isn't brave, it's human. I want to live in a world where using our platforms to condemn ethnic cleansing isn't a risk, it's a given. I want to live in a world where advocating for the most marginalized isn't rewarded, it is expected. I want my children to know that Palestinian liberation is their liberation, is our liberation. They are not separate.
That was the rapper Macklemore at an important program to free the Columbia graduate and pro-Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil and to stop the genocide of the Palestinian people. The final solution was a term that Hitler used to refer to the elimination of the Jewish people in Europe, the systematic murder, crushing, and silencing of a whole people. And this is what Israel, with the full backing of the United States, is attempting in the Israeli genocidal slaughter of the Palestinian people, making it impossible for the Palestinian people to survive as a people in the historic homeland of Palestine, whether through mass murder, mass imprisonment, forced mass exile, or all of the above. Do not look away. Do not stand aside. The streets of Gaza are filled with concrete, rubble, dust, and blood. 2 million people deprived of food, water, medical supplies. Israel is bombing tents.
Airstrikes have targeted displaced people, many of whom are living in tents. Hundreds of thousands are at risk of severe hunger and malnutrition as Israel continues its bombardment.
Hospitals, an aid kitchen while people line up for food. There is no fuel for bakeries, ambulances, water desalination plants. The sewage system is destroyed, and hundreds of tons of garbage are piling up, disease running rampant. Hospitals are running out of blood, which people cannot donate because they are dehydrated and starving. And the forced displacement continues. In the last week, hundreds have been murdered, including 180 children in one day. On top of the over 60,000 already killed, almost 20,000 of whom are children. What is this but genocide moves toward the final solution? It is possible, even likely, that the Israeli army will begin a ground invasion into Gaza, which will multiply the death, terror, and destruction, the all-out ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people from Gaza threatened by Trump and the genocidal maniac Netanyahu. But not only is Israel systematically attempting to destroy a people, they are systematically targeting those who expose this. In the occupied Palestinian territory of the West Bank, where over 3 million Palestinians live, the Israeli army is working with settlers to ethnically cleanse the region with bulldozers, bullets, and arrests. This is captured in the powerful new documentary, No Other Land, which tells the story of the forced displacement of people in the village Masafer Yatta and the struggle to form human connections across impossible conditions. 3 weeks ago, No Other Land won an Oscar. And this week, one of the filmmakers, Hamdan Bilal, was viciously beaten by Israeli settlers and then beaten and kidnapped by the Israeli army. He was released on Wednesday due to mass outrage. And this is one of the filmmakers, Basil Adra.
There is revenge. They want to punish us or try to scare us from speak up and speak loud. And yeah, and the Oscar brought a lot of tension, and everybody almost in the world, millions of people start to know about Masafer Yatta and the story of Masafer Yatta.
Revenge for telling the truth. Revenge for exposing Israel's lies. Back in Gaza, Israel assassinated two more journalists, Hossam Shabbat and Mohammed Mansour, making this over 208 media workers who've been killed in the last year and a half. Mohammed was targeted in a missile strike on his home, and Hossam was targeted in his car. And these were not accidental or incidental. They were put on a hit list by Israel, repeatedly threatened, and then finally assassinated. But knowing they were in Israel's crosshairs, they did not back down. They continued to courageously show the world. Hossam was 23 years old. He reported for Al Jazeera and was one of the few journalists who stayed in northern Gaza last year after violent forced evacuations. He reported after the bomb blasts and in the hospitals, and he watched his colleagues killed. According to those who knew him, he was funny and loving and, yes, courageous. He left this letter to be posted if he was murdered. And he wrote in part, "If you're reading this, it means I've been killed, most likely targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. When this all began, I was only 21 years old, a college student with dreams like anyone else." I ask you now, do not stop speaking about Gaza. Do not let the world look away. Keep fighting. Keep telling our stories until Palestine is free. For the last time, Hossam Shabbat from northern Gaza. Again, do not look away. As he said, keep fighting, and that fight must grow broader, deeper, and more determined, taking responsibility to act until this nightmare is ended. Stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people. Stop the repression of pro-Palestinian voices. Now we want to play a clip from the actress and the comedian Hannah Einbinder speaking powerfully at a human rights campaign event.
I see it as antithetical to our deepest Jewish traditions to fall in line and not question the actions of a state enacting atrocities in our name. Israel's actions are not in the name of Jewish safety, and it is the very conflation of Israel's actions with the Jewish people that continues to endanger Jews around the world. Donald Trump and the Israeli government have suggested that displaced Palestinians be taken by other countries. We Jews know all too well the pain of having to leave our homelands or face certain death. We queer people know what it is like to be marginalized and demonized in society without the institutional power necessary to protect our community. Our histories and communal experiences demand that we recognize this familiar experience and stand in solidarity with Palestinians, that we say no to Trump, no to Netanyahu. As Jewish people, we must say no to the weaponization of our grief for the hostages and our historical trauma to justify murdering civilians. We have to look into the tearful eyes of the children of Palestine orphaned by American bombs and say no, never again is now, never again for anyone. Fascism is rising across the globe. We are watching our right to free speech dissolve before our eyes. Mahmoud Khalil, a Colombia organizer who protested the bombardment of his people, is sitting in an ICE detention center in Louisiana because his cry for humanity is in opposition to the military interests of our country and the agenda of the Trump administration. A young activist was ripped away from his 8 months pregnant wife in the night with no crime and no warrant. And Donald Trump says this violent disappearance was done to combat anti-Semitism. Mahmoud Khalil standing alongside both Palestinians and many Jewish students calling for the Israeli army to stop dropping bombs on his homeland does not make me feel unsafe. Elon Musk and Steve Bannon hailing Hitler does. Donald Trump calling a group of white nationalists with tiki torches shouting Jews will not replace us very fine people does. All struggles for liberation will be won by loudly opposing the corporations who fuel the destruction of our planet and the institutions that fuel mass death of our fellow human beings. Visibility is a responsibility. Those of us who have a platform must use our voices to ensure that speaking out is not outlawed altogether. Thank you.
We live in troubled times.